21st century is filled with anxiety. Tar sands and war, fracking the poor, and plastic has filled up the sea. To keep everyone calm and mellow, a neurological plateau fellow, with Prozac in our water, ignore waste and slaughter, comply in your complacency.
From Colorado and today, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, welcome to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com, and we are a proud member of the Coffee Party USA Network. And today we're going to be talking about all the Democratic candidates that are running for president, and not necessarily to support one or another, but to kind of just, I guess, take stock of their qualifications and what strategies they might need. And we're going to be talking with Vic Myers, who's a Colorado Democratic leader and a former candidate for Colorado's 5th U.S. House District. And Vic, I know you're online and you're going to kind of be part of this opening segment with me. So welcome to the Tim Danahy Show.
Thanks for having me on with you. I really enjoy it.
Well, you're a good man, Vic, and not only a good man, you should be our U.S. Representative from Colorado's 5th District, but it wasn't in the stacked cards, was it?
Well, I like to think I would be less embarrassing than what we've ended up with, but it is what it is.
Yeah, well, the country will soon find out what's going on. But before we start talking about presidential politics, let's first talk about some of the stuff that's in the news. And first thing I wanted to make mention is there's a bookstore. And I know a bookstore doesn't make news nationally, but there's a bookstore in Taos, New Mexico, and it's called Moby Dickens, and its owner is a guy named Jay Moore, a nice guy. Well, Moby Dickens had to close its doors. They're the only bookstore in town, the only bookstore in Taos, and they couldn't compete, and they couldn't compete with Amazon. And so now the entire community, and Taos is a beautiful community, but the entire community no longer has a bookstore. And many people will say, fine, we'll get our books from Amazon. But there's something lost there. You know, in France, they have a law that says books must be sold at the retail price, which means that if the publisher says it's a $25 book, a bookstore or Amazon or whomever has to sell it for $25, and then the stores have to compete on the basis of service and convenience. Because France realizes the bookstores are an important part of their national culture. And so it's a shame that our bookstores are falling by the wayside due to a company like Amazon, and honestly for people who just think that buying from an online retailer with no investment in your community is a better way to go. Vic, you feel these kind of losses every day down in your home area, don't you?
Oh, yeah. We've lost virtually every mom-and-pop business in Trinidad down here. There's one or two still surviving, but between Walmart and, well, mostly between Walmart, you know, they've shut down most of our mom-and-pop businesses. So.
Yeah, it's just a shame, but anyway, but shame on the people in Taos who sought to save a few dollars and not shop from a man who invested time and money in your community, and you still went out and you bought Amazon books. And tell me how much Amazon has invested in your community. So, Jay Moore, Moby Dickens, I want to thank you for your service to the book-loving community. You will be missed, and you know, I'm a guy. I don't like retailing, so but I do love bookstores. And now there really is no reason for me to go to Taos anymore. So Moby Dickens.
Maybe part of the secret is getting people to read again.
Yeah, it is something, you know. But there are some surprising numbers. People are reading, but it's what they're reading, I guess, that is evolving. We got another story, Vic, and I think you'll like this one. This is something that falls under our lies, damn lies, and statistics category. And it comes from a USA Today storyline. And we'll talk more about this after the break when we talk about the presidential candidates, Democratic. But they have this storyline that says, Clinton off to record-setting start. And then the subheadline is, most of the $45 million in initial quarter are amounts under $100. And then it goes on further into the article and says, while the final figures still are being tallied, the numbers appear to highlight Clinton's early grassroots success. 91% of donations have come in from amounts of $100 or less. And then one of her campaign managers, Robbie Mook, he said to Clinton people, he said, many people doubted whether we could build an organization powered by so many grassroots supporters, and today's announcement proves them wrong. Well, listeners, this is what I want to get to about lies, damn lies, and statistics, because this is a totally misleading story. It's a misleading headline, because you don't. They didn't give all the numbers. Instead, they issued a political report because you don't know how many people donated. You know, so she's kind of faking the grassroots support. For example, and bear with me, and listeners, you always have to deal with me whenever it comes to numbers, and I know it's bad radio, but bear with me on this because it's an important lesson to learn when reading the newspapers. And so if she raised $41.9 million, is what she said, a record start. Well, if nine bankers gave her $41,895,000, or $895,000, if nine bankers gave her everything except $5,000 and 91 people gave her $50, she could then say 91%. And so it's totally misleading because she's the numbers aren't there. But her full report will come out July. Numbers aren't there, but her full report will come out July 15th, and we'll be watching for that. Vic, this is something that I'm sure you've seen politicians do all the time.
Spin things? Maybe a little.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's a spin thing. So I'll be curious, as I know you will, regarding her the makeup of this $41.9 million, because I seriously doubt if she is raising money by grassroots support. I'm sure she's getting some, but it's...
if she was raising that kind of money from small donors, then her crowds would be bigger than Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, it's a tough one to say. Okay, let's get into another story that I wanted to talk about a little bit, and I think it's an important issue. Salaried overtime, and President Obama is getting really eviscerated by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and others, including the Restaurant Association, for now requiring that salaried overtime be paid to salaried middle-income earners who work for companies. And these aren't really high-income jobs, but they are higher than what was usually previously covered. And but the companies don't want to pay these salaried people for their efforts. You know, and they say the usual thing that, well, if people can't work overtime, you know, then it's going to slow their advancement. And they say that they're going to have to do job cuts and all the other issues they typically do. And I'm going to make mention of a friend of mine who I've known for just about my whole life, ever since kindergarten. And he worked in the restaurant industry, and I hate to give anecdotes, but this illustrates the mindset of the Chamber of Commerce and the Restaurant Association. But he was a manager, and he was a very good one, and he would work and work, and he would get things efficient, get everything operating. He had maybe three assistant managers, and everything would be humming, and all of his restaurants were extremely profitable whenever he worked for the chains, restaurant chains. And then he was so good that whenever an assistant manager would quit or leave, they wouldn't replace him. And instead, they would expect him to fill more hours and work more without paying him. And this is the mindset of industry regarding salaried overtime. And I'm glad to see President Obama take this kind of stand. What's your thought on that, Vic?
I have a friend very similar to yours that's extremely capable in running restaurants, and she was running into the exact same thing. To me, it's part of the bigger picture. As far as the Chamber of Commerce and those guys saying we can't afford it, the restaurant saying we can't afford it, we have all the data in the world that backs up President Obama and a need to do this. And it's a matter of, you know, if mainstream media would actually look at the data and analyze it, pretend they're journalists for a minute, then they would be able to put that information out to the population so that we can all make a informed decision on whether or not to get behind and support the president on this. And I think they would.
Well, and economists have pretty much discounted everything that the Chamber of Commerce has said on this issue. And so you're right, Vic. You know, it's just a situation where, you know, it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction by business to say, oh, my God, we have to pay for our labor. We can't take advantage of it. It's like Goldman Sachs. Vic, you remember this. When Goldman Sachs has instructed their interns, the interns who work for free, they said, please don't work past midnight because you have to have a life of your own, because these interns were, like, even committing suicide because, you know, they were so driven to try and impress the managers and superiors at Goldman Sachs and other big banks on Wall Street, that they were getting serious issues. And so business, if they could, would not pay us a dime. And so it's hats off to President Obama for trying to get some fair value for some honest work for a lot of good people in this country. What do you think, Vic?
I think, like you said, hats off to him. It's for starting to turn the tide against the last 40 years of moving in the direction that you said a minute ago, where they wouldn't pay us at all if they could get away with it.
Yeah, it's a sad situation. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. What we're going to do is a break for a commercial, and then when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Vic Myers, and we're going to be talking about the announced candidates for president, the Democrats, and we're going to kind of take stock and find out, you know, maybe what their strategies would be, and we're gonna play campaign strategists here and try and figure out how to assess these guys. So you're listening to Vic Myers and me here on the Tim Danahy Show. We'll be right back.
TV. Why do you take such a screwing? Is it the Prozac you're doing? This Prozac goes to your brain, chills you out so you don't complain. Critical thought is at level zero. Why Bradley Manning's in jail, not a hero.
Our government should be open. It must be accountable to the people. And we demand access to vote and our votes be counted and verified. These concepts should be common sense in our democracy, but they're not. Some would deny us these rights. But people died for them, and Common Cause works every day to make certain they did not die in vain. Join Common Cause. Keep your rights and hold political power accountable where it should be. The people. CommonCause.org. Holding power accountable.
It must be the Prozac in you to vote for the Wall Street crew. Year after year is perfectly clear. It must be the Prozac in you.
You preserve a nation one community at a time, with shared knowledge and an informed electorate, with many voices speaking with civility and integrity. And we will preserve our nation when we participate, we learn, we discuss, we vote. We are the Coffee Party USA. Join us today. CoffeePartyUSA.com.
When it's time for electioneering, other candidates all disappearing. Arrest and censor the opposition, 'cause they have a contrary position.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com. And a few weeks ago, I poked fun at the large number of Republican candidates running for president, and I kind of indicated the unfolding folly of trying to achieve any sort of quality or substantive debate with all these guys and one woman standing on stage. And I went on to suggest that the Republicans should have something like a debate tournament, you know, like brackets and a show for random seeding to see who's going to debate who in the first round and so forth. And then I went on to say that they should have one-on-one debates and the public would vote for the winners, much like they do on The Voice. And I don't know if they do that on like Dancing with the Stars or something. I don't know how they do that one. But then
I think on the Republican side, you'd have to have them draw numbers, and then I think they called the show The Price is Right and have them come down.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and come on down, you know, and then they have a debate. We could have a final four. I mean, really, people would be turning into this presidential election like nothing else, and they would really have to – it would be fascinating. It would be great theater, and really, I have a hunch it would be great democracy, but it'll never happen, but I may have spoken too soon. That's because now there's like five or six Democratic candidates for president, too, and we may need a scorecard for them. And so let's take a stock of the Democrats. And so that's why Vic Myers is here. And Vic, again, thank you for being here on the Tim Danahy Show.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me. And disclaimer up front, I am a ardent Bernie Sanders supporter, so if there's any bias in my thoughts.
I've got a bias too, and my bias is, you know, and maybe you can talk me down from this, but my bias is, please, somebody other than Hillary Clinton. And so I'm open to some of these other guys, and so I want to kind of, you know, kind of take a look at it. And really, Vic, maybe the first person we should talk about is Lincoln Chafee. He's kind of not, doesn't even show up on the under 1% radar right now, but we have to give him his due. I mean, isn't he like a former Republican / independent, current Democrat and a Rhode Island?
He was a Republican, and he was a very liberal Republican who got fed up with Reitberg swing of their party, and he decided that he had to be an independent, and he did vote independent, and then he just recently switched to Democrat. And you know, I don't take him very seriously yet. His big campaign announcement on the day he announced was we should go to the metric system, which may be a very good idea, may have good merit, but that was the big thing about his campaign so far, and I just don't think he's so far shown any legs for being serious.
Yeah, I don't think the metric system is going to carry the South, Vic. you know, it's, you know, rural America has not been clamoring for the metric system. But to Lincoln Chafee's credit, he has come out strongly, I believe, against the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And so, you know, we need to know more about him, but he's certainly not turbocharging his campaign in any way, shape, or form. Or maybe he isn't, just not getting the coverage that he should. A tough call on that one.
That's very possible.
Yeah, and so maybe we just keep him in the background for now. What do you think?
I think that's fair. I mean, if there's one thing that I learned from my congressional campaign was you can't count on the media to tell people what your positions are on anything. So maybe the fair thing is to keep an open mind about thinking.
Yeah, well, and there's another guy, too, that I was very hopeful, and he seemed to be very capable, and then he announced his campaign, and then died right after it started, and that's Martin O'Malley, who I believe was a former governor of Maryland, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Correct. And I was actually looking forward to supporting Martin O'Malley until I decided that I really had to be honest and go with Bernie Sanders. But Martin O'Malley, he's got a lot of good progressive ideas. He's championing the right ideas as far as being a real Democrat. But his track going so far, instead of going out there, as far as I can tell, and hitting hard on the issues and being positive and talking about what he would do to fix things, he's already leaned into the desperation mode of attacking Bernie Sanders. So I don't see how he's going to get very far if he starts at this stage in attacking to try and get some traction. I mean, it gets him a couple of headlines, but it's not getting him any supporters.
Is he trying to elbow out other candidates just so he can get mano-a-mano with Hillary Clinton? Do you think that's why he's doing it? Is that his strategy?
Well, I think my guess is that there's a Clinton establishment camp or populace, and there's a not Hillary populace, and there's only so much oxygen in the room, and right now Bernie Sanders is taking all of that oxygen, so he's trying to fight for some of that oxygen.
Well, obviously, I'm kind of skirting around Bernie Sanders right now and Hillary Clinton because they are obviously the two leading candidates and they have the most compelling stories. But I Martin O'Malley, you know, he seems like a very capable candidate who has not managed his campaign well or has not done anything to really distinguish himself from the rest of the pack. Is that kind of a fair assessment?
I think that's fair, and I think that he would be, you know, if Hillary and Bernie and all the others were on a train together that went off the tracks and Martin O'Malley was the only guy and he became our nominee, I think he would make a good nominee. But he's got to do something different with his campaign if he's going to give himself even a chance.
Well, and Yeah, the most recent announcement was a guy who honestly, Vic, kind of fascinated me early on, and I'd like to know more about, and that is former Senator Jim Webb from Virginia. I sense that he waited too long to make his announcement. I think if he had made his announcement last fall or last winter, he might have gained more traction. But what do you know about Jim Webb?
I know that he's a fairly conservative Democrat, except in the area of going to war. He's very, in my mind, he's got his head in the right place with regards to military action. He's been to combat. He's seen it. And he doesn't think there's anything good about going back. So I like the idea that he doesn't want to keep prolonging our Middle East involvement, sending more people to war. But when it comes to the economic issues and things like that, he's more Hillary than anybody. And, you know, he's very friendly to Wall Street. And I think he'll have a very tough time getting traction in the Democratic Party today for the same reason that I think that Hillary's win isn't nearly as inevitable as a lot of people think.
Well, Vic, you know, O'Malley and Webb, what would you do if you were their campaign manager to kind of jumpstart their campaigns and to try and get them a little bit more into the public eye?
I think that, you know, it's hard for me to say what Webb should do because I haven't seen what he's doing. I mean, his campaign announcement was a blog post and a tweet. It's making me wonder, just like with Lincoln Chafee, is he really serious? I've been trying to figure out what his plans are, what he's angling for, why he announced when I haven't seen anything that says I'm serious about running for president.
Well, you know, Vic, I should make mention that I tried to contact both O'Malley and Webb's campaign numbers, you know, and their press group. And I said, hey, would you like to come on a show? I said, you know, you'll get exposure to, or you will reach potentially 640,000 people, and mostly progressive people. And I said, would you like to come on the show? And both camps, one would think they would jump at that to get themselves, you know, the opportunity to sit down for a half hour, 45 minutes and talk about their programs to a progressive, active audience, and I haven't heard back from either one of them. And to me, I should have at least gotten a query that says, what's this all about? and then they can, you know, say yes or no. But to me, it sounds like their campaigns are old school, traditional, and if they don't do something quick, they're going to fall by the wayside just as quick. What do you think?
I think that's a pretty good guess. I mean, part of the problem with guys or girls campaigning this cycle is everybody's assuming it's going to be, you know, the conventional wisdom, same old way of campaigning. But I think things have gotten bad enough for the middle class in America that you can't rely on the traditional assumptions that we've always relied on in the past. Traditional methods of campaigning, you're going to have to be creative.
Yeah, and they're going to have to do something to get themselves out there. Maybe what they're doing is just trying to show up as a couple of percentage points in order to show up in some sort of Democratic debate, and maybe then they make their images known. That would be a low budget way to do it. But anyway,
if our party would have some more debates sooner rather than waiting, I think that would serve our democracy well. The establishment doesn't want to start the debates too soon. So,
why would that be, Vic?
Well, I think that we have the stronger chance that the establishment pick is going to have tougher and tougher competition.
Okay, so what you're saying is that perhaps the I'm going to use a dramatic term, like the party elites or however it would be, the people behind the curtain are saying we don't want to deal with these hassles or give them credence this early on. Would that be a fair statement? They've kind of picked their candidates?
Yeah, I think they're more concerned with keeping control over who the nominee is than they are with living up to the principles of our democracy and making sure that people have an informed choice of picking the right person.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've deliberately skirted two candidates, Clinton and Sanders, because that's really where the fireworks are right now. And what I want to do, Vic, is I want to break for another commercial. And then when we get back, let's focus on Clinton and Sanders and just kind of see what's developing here. Does that sound like a plan for you?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. We're talking with Vic Myers, a leading Colorado Democrat, a good man, and a friend of the show, and you're listening to him here on The Tim Danny Show. We'll be right back.
While Obama bails out billionaires and his drones fly through the air, it must be the Prozac in you.
A good man, real people, clear thinking, enjoyable, quality talk. A new name, EgbertoWillies.com. He talks politics, he talks issues, and you can hear his radio shows and read his blog at EgbertoWillies.com. You can link to him here at Danahy.com. He's also part of CoffeePartyUSA.com's network. Or, if you can spell EgbertoWillies.com, you found a new voice you'll want to hear. EgbertoWillies.com.
It must be the Prozac in you to vote for the Wall Street crew. Year after year, it's perfectly clear. It must be the Prozac in you.
Welcome to this episode of the Tim Danahy Show's American History Minutes. In 1995, when the U.S. Senate was considering the United States as part of the World Trade Organization, Ralph Nader challenged every member of Congress to read the entire treaty and answer 10 simple questions in public. Nader asked because he saw no evidence that any congressman even read what was in the bill that would represent the greatest surrender of local, state, and national sovereignty in United States history. Of all the members of Congress, only Senator Hank Brown of Colorado had the fortitude to accept Nader's challenge. He read the World Trade Agreement, sat down in front of an audience and cameras, and correctly answered 12 questions. His response to actually reading the treaty? He said he believed in free trade, but he was stunned how the World Trade Organization was a threat to national sovereignty. No other member of Congress showed evidence of reading the bill, and Senator Brown went to his fellow senators and tried to tell them the trade agreement was bad for America. However, no one changed their vote. The U.S. became part of the World Trade Organization, and all our legislation that affects business and consumers is subjugated to the final authority of the World Trade Organization. The world's greatest deliberative body didn't even read the bill that surrendered our ability to freely make future laws. This American History Minute is brought to you by The Tim Danahy Show. Please like us on Facebook at Tim Danahy Show, follow us on Twitter at hashtag Tim Danahy Show, and listen to us at danahy.com.
One would think we would be a bit curious, if not outrageously furious, at the Franken food on our plate, Obama's list to assassinate. Torture tasing and pepper spraying, all barbaric behavior just saying, and methane gas is okay in your glass, it must be the Prozac you do.
Welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com, and we are talking with Vic Myers, who's a leading Colorado Democrat, a former candidate for the U.S. House District 5 in Colorado.
Four,
I'm sorry. They keep moving these things around. And incidentally, Vic, we should thank the Supreme Court. And I know you and I would be rare to thank the Supreme Court, but one of their decisions last month was to open a window to make redistricting a little bit more fair rather than doing the political trade-offs to, say, make one district safe and one district open. So the U.S. Supreme Court has at least given us the possibility of having competitive districts again.
If we open the door, if we'll just take advantage and walk through it and start forcing our politicians to come up with the independent redistricting commissions like Arizona has, that would be a good thing.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they're scared to death. If there was a citizens' initiative on this thing, unfortunately, Colorado is one of the best referendum states. It's not hard to get a ballot issue out there, and this might be something that the citizens can grab and take from the politicians and get some competitive districts again and take Colorado Springs as one district and make it competitive, and take the eastern plains of Colorado, make it competitive, and then even on the other side, Diana DeGette needs a competitive district too. It makes our politicians better. And
I saw a computer model last year when I was campaigning. I can't remember which of the big colleges did it. They came up with a computer model that puts in all the factors that are supposed to be considered: demographics, age, party affiliation, socioeconomic factors, racial factors. It puts all that stuff into a computer program, and it draws your districts for you. And Colorado would be radically different. The 4th CD would go basically from Pueblo east and south. And like you said, Colorado Springs would still be one little district, but it was a much more sensible drawing of our districts, and I wish we could get something sensible like that for our state.
Yeah, well, let's... we definitely need it. I know that the Republicans overall, their attitude is we can run the country through the House of Representatives. We don't need the presidency because the House of Representatives controls the money. And so anyway, but
what a bang up job they're doing.
literally, I guess they're banging. But anyway, let's get back to the presidential issues here, and I appreciate you following me down the redistricting road. The two candidates that we have remaining, Vic, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And I'm just going to say Hillary Clinton is kind of like the anointed one, the chosen one, kind of like the Godhead, like Siddhartha or something, where she has been decreed the popular candidate, and she is expected to win and move on to the White House as if it's her dynasty. And she is running the polls. I do not know the sources of the polls, but the polls are saying she has 71% of the Democratic support. But there's something in the air right now. And it's Bernie Sanders, and while he's only showing up in the teens, I believe, there seems to be a growing awareness that there's somebody out there who's not getting a lot of coverage. Overall, how would you assess that, saying that Bernie Sanders is kind of upsetting the Democratic apple cart?
I don't think he's upsetting it so much as he's putting some grease on the wheels and strengthening spokes on the wheels and giving it new shocks and making it much more solid, giving people a reason to get on the apple cart and as opposed to sit on the sidelines and watching it go by. I think that's what's really going on is, and as time goes on, we're going to see more and more people getting on the cart because of him, and that's how he's going to eventually win the nomination.
Well, and Vic, when I look at Hillary Clinton, and you know, I just kind of say, you know, and again, I have to be subjective and you know, very unprofessional, but I just kind of go, curse you, woman, stop the politics and say something. You know, it's like whenever the Trans-Pacific Partnership debates were going on, and so she goes on a listening tour to Chipotle in Iowa, really? I mean, this is the major economic issue in this country since the Gilded Age, and she's sitting here in a Chipotle talking with people in Iowa, and I'm sitting here going, take a stand, woman, and she doesn't take a stand. And then the same thing with, like, core curriculum. You know, she's torn between go ahead, please.
I think, in fairness to her, I think she got a bad rap on the whole Chipotle thing because she was out campaigning, she had stopwatch, whatever. That's the whole, so she was in Chipotle, isn't really part of the broader issues. The problem is, and you spoke to this too, is that she's not talking about the issues and where she stands on them. You know, in my mind, she is one of the most qualified people to run for president since her founding fathers, given her resume. But her resume, I don't think, is going to be enough because people at this point in our nation's history, we need somebody who is going to lead. And you don't lead by saying, I would probably vote against TPP or I'm not going to talk about it right now. We need a leader, and I think that's her her weak point, is that she doesn't have the courage to stand out there and lead on the issues and be the hard charger and bring people along to her point of view.
Well, Vic, you know, that reminds me from 2008, somebody said of Hillary Clinton that she's proudly fighting for what's popular and valiantly defending us against what's unpopular. You know, which is really kind of a total absence of leadership, you know, and but she's not taking positions on like core curriculum because she's afraid of upsetting the privatized educational institutions on one side, or does she aggravate the teachers union on the other side? When banking reform, does she annoy the bankers who are major contributors, particularly Goldman Sachs, or does she stand for citizens and trying to get you know, even something like Dodd-Frank implemented or Glass-Steagall reintroduced? She just isn't advocating anything. Everything seems to be triangulating.
And it's a shame because I think she probably is more liberal than she's putting herself out there to be. I think she's playing the 50-plus-1 game that lost her the 2008 nomination. She's trying to do just enough and not go too far to the left, thinking she's going to have to come back during the middle. But frankly, I think there's a lot of people in this country who are fed up enough that they're ready to finally have the fight over where we want our country to be. Do we want it to be Tea Party conservative, or do we want it to be a democratic socialist type country? I think they're ready for that argument. I'm certainly ready for it.
Well,
and I'm ready to fight like hell to have it.
Well, you're bringing up an interesting point. You know, typically in the primaries, in the early stages of the election, and I think it was Hillary Clinton's husband, Bill Clinton, who said you run left in the primaries and you come back centrist in the main election, the final election. And so she seems to be not going left enough, and as a result, it seems to be opening up somebody who is very issue-oriented. just like Ralph Nader, is issue oriented, and that is Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie Sanders is coming out and saying this is wrong, this is what we need to do, and this has to be Hillary Clinton's worst nightmare, isn't it?
Yes. I think if the Republicans this year were putting out somebody in one of their multitude of candidates, if any one of them were in any way reasonable and centrist, and you know every one of those guys are boxing themselves onto the far right car, and there's no way that they can come back centrist in the general election. So I think she's forgetting that. She's not recognizing that. That opens the door for a Bernie Sanders to come out and say, well, this is where the right wing is. This is where the last 40 years have been, and this is where I want to take us, and this is how I want to take us. And in the positions that he's advocating, they're resonating with people across the country, regardless of whether they're Republicans, Democrats, Independents, or whatever.
Well,
and, you know, he's running centrist now, in my opinion, because I think he's where the majority of the country is.
Well, you know, they have this XY axis type of thing, you know, except boxed in, and it's conservative, and it just kind of rates everybody according to a composite of their views. And I know I'm talking, you know, all wonky again, but it's funny that if you take everybody and you don't assign a label to it, and you take people's positions, not knowing whether it's Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, like what do you think about Glass-Steagall or food labeling or the trade agreement or whatever. Most people show up on this XY coordinates as Democratic Socialist, and that's what people don't realize. They're afraid of the label, but whenever they actually look at the position without labels, they're very supportive of it, and that seems to be what Bernie Sanders is doing. He's demystifying this whole attitude toward economic and social justice.
I think if we look back, if we could jump forward to this time in 2017 and talk about the election that happened last November, we're gonna see one of two things. Either I'm wrong as hell and Hillary will be our new president because she followed her path, or I think what's more likely, we're going to look back and we're going to say that the election of 2016 is very much like the election that brought in Franklin Roosevelt, where the country had enough, that they didn't want the banks and the billionaires to control everything anymore, and they wanted a country that supported all its citizens. And I think it's really going to be a historic election beyond anybody's guess right now.
Well, and with this election, with Bernie Sanders doing what he's doing, and the media isn't really talking about this, and they're certainly not showing videos about it, but he's packing the house in 10,000 seat arenas in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and wherever he goes, it's like a rock star, and it's exactly what the media doesn't want to see, which makes me wonder, Vic, is his biggest threat to Hillary is that he is taking away, I have to use a military term, but I think you'll get it, and you'll probably be able to phrase it better than I can, but he's taken away the ground forces. I mean, she's got the money, but she doesn't have the ground game if Bernie Sanders continues to draw these kind of numbers, right?
Absolutely. It's kind of a good analogy. She's got the air power, and she can bombard us from the air, but he's got the ground game, and he's got the foot soldiers that are going to have to go door to door, and you know, she can't go the way she wants, the way she is, if she wants to win. There's just no way, because the other part of it is, will people get excited about her? I mean, a lot of people will, simply because we have an opportunity for the first time to elect a woman to the presidency, and that's a really good thing and a great opportunity. But it's not enough to say, this is why I'm voting for this person. She has an opportunity, if she would be become a centrist, if she would mean what she says and really show us that she is out there for the everyday guy and not Wall Street, because I think she probably gets a little unfair treatment. She's probably not as Wall Street as she's being painted, but she's definitely more Wall Street than I would like her to be. But we need, and you know, I totally forgot where I was going with this.
Well, it makes me wonder, though, Vic, you know, the winner of this, it makes me think that what if they were if Bernie Sanders were to announce a vice president before the convention, and what if he were to say Elizabeth Warren, or what if he were to say Dianne Feinstein or something like that? Dianne Feinstein's not on my happy list right now, but anyway, what if he were to announce somebody and just say, you know, what's Russ Feingold in Wisconsin, and just round it out and show a little bit of depth, that could attract the female voter if he could get a Elizabeth Warren or somebody, wouldn't it? Or even if Hillary Clinton were to say, hey, I need to show my progressive bona fides or by having Elizabeth Warren as a running mate or something. It would really add.
My guess is Elizabeth Warren would do what you're talking about for either Bernie or Hillary, but I don't think that she would agree. I don't think she would accept.
Yeah, I wonder. You want to see what the whole platform is before you kind of commit. Unfortunately, the process is to elect a nominee, and then the nominee gets to pick their vice president candidate. Yeah. So it's kind of the horse before the cart, and we want to put the cart before the horse.
I've been trying to imagine who Bernie would pick as a VP, and I'm coming up empty with who I think he would pick or would make a good running mate. Maybe Sherrod Brown, as far as doing the strategic thing and picking from a certain demographic, South or female or Hispanic or what have you. I don't know.
I'd be
that part of it really plays as much.
I would be inclined to take a successful liberal businessman. You know, and I don't know who that would be. I know there are many of them, but
I'll tell you who would get me excited even more is Robert Reich.
Yeah, yeah, he's a good man, former Secretary of Labor, very very prominent, an economist. That would be a step in the right direction. Whether or not that would capture the popular imagination, it's tough to say. But yeah, maybe it should not be a politician, and maybe they should use that and just say, hey, this is a guy who knows how America works, and take it from there. So interesting ideas. I'll tell you what, Vic, can you stay with me? I need to do another break, but I want to talk just a few minutes, and I know we didn't mention this, but let's talk about, just for the briefest amount of time, some of the Republican candidates, okay? And we'll fly through it, and we'll just see if there's anybody out there that might have a chance of capturing any of our imaginations or engage in at least an interesting debate. Does that sound okay?
That sounds like a fun conversation.
Okay, we'll do that. We're talking with Vic Myers, and you're listening to him here on the Tim Danny Show. We'll be right back.
It must be the Prozac in you to vote for the Wall Street crew. Year after year, it's perfectly clear. It must be the Prozac in you.
We, the people of the United States of America, reject the U.S. Supreme Court Citizens United ruling and other related cases, and move to amend our Constitution to firmly establish that money is not speech, and that human beings, not corporations, are persons entitled to constitutional rights. Go to movetoamend.org. Add your voice to the 350,000 people who say, enough. This is a government of the people, by the people, for the people.
It must be the water you're drinking that lets Wall Street do your thinking. You say you're 99th percentile. But you vote for the 1% while we pay a war machine several trillion.
Welcome back to the Tim Danhey Show, and Vic Myers is with us, and we're talking about Democratic presidential candidates. And Vic, I appreciate you staying longer than I had promised. But we've done a pretty good job talking about the Democratic candidates, and I wanted to spend just a couple minutes, there's, I think, 16, somewhere around there, Democratic candidates right now, Republican candidates, and I think Chris Christie came in this week, and Rick Perry, and Jeb Bush, and Rick Santorum, and Bobby Jindal, and Scott Walker, and I mean, really, it's a long. Carly Fiorina and Ben Carson, and
I hear they're going to dig up Reagan next week.
They may have to. I think he's got a son running around now that is on the radio that could probably do it. But actually, Reagan's too moderate for these guys.
Going to say Ron Jr. is way too liberal.
Yeah, well, he is. Yeah. But even Ronald Reagan of Death Valley days and my lunch with Gonzo or whatever whatever movies he was making, but Ronald Reagan could not win the Republican primary anymore because he's too moderate, and that's kind of a scary thing. But are there any excuse me? Are there any candidates that show up? Republican candidates show up on the credibility radar? And I know you and I are pretty progressive, but I mean, is there anybody out there that shows up on the credible radar?
When I sit back and I try and be objective and take away my personal biases and look at the Republican field, about the time I think that maybe there's a chance that one of them could be reasonable, then they'll do something stupid like say, my brother would be my foreign policy advisor.
Yeah.
Or, all Mexicans are rapists or whatever. Every time you start to think one of them might be credible, they open their mouth and prove you wrong.
Yeah, it makes me think of Rick Santorum. He goes, yes, I'm a devout Catholic, but whenever the Pope comes out for climate change, it turns out he's a devout Coke aficionado. The Pope or the Coke brothers, and I guess Santorum has picked the Coke brothers. And then he goes on to make a snarky comment about the church has been wrong about science and its history. There's one guy, though, that really scares me. And that is Scott Walker. And, I study fascism, and I've done a couple of shows on fascism, and they're clinical. What the definition is, how it's implemented, could it happen in the United States, the 14 points of fascism, how Mussolini did it. Scott Walker is a fascist. And everything he does, whether unions or pensions or secrecy or education or business, his he's a fascist. And he scares the living daylights out of me more than any of the other candidates. And, I mean, he makes it so, I mean, Chris Christie might even, put together a coherent platform. But Scott Walker is dangerous in my world, Vic.
I can't argue with you at all there, looking at his track record. But I have a tough time seeing any of these guys. And we were talking earlier about how you have to run to one side and then come back to the middle for the general election. These guys are attacking so far to the right that I have a hard time seeing even Scott Walker coming back to the middle enough that he'll be taken seriously by enough people.
Yeah, Rand Paul, comes out with a case. I mean, Rand Paul
he actually had me worried earlier.
Yeah.
When he was sticking to his usual, what he had been preaching to get popular on, but then when he announced and he started tacking to the right and leaning into, what was the issue? I forget what it was. Well, war is one of them. He's still against going in the Middle East, but he's waffling. And I think he tacked to the right. He blew his credibility. I wish I could remember the specific issue and comment that he made.
Well, and I know he came out with that tax proposal where he said all income should be taxed at 14.5%, which is absolutely the most destructive economic policy that could ever be imagined, because poor people now will be paying, when you add sales taxes and property taxes and vehicle taxes and all these other things, poor people will be paying way more than rich people in taxes as a percentage of income. And so you look at that and say, Rand Paul, you know, go back to reading Ayn Rand with that Paul Ryan, whatever his name is, up in Wisconsin. And because you right. you are just whacked out ideologue, and so I was hopeful on issues like NSA reform and things like that, that maybe Rand Paul would be a credible voice, but he,
I think that was the issue.
Yeah, and maybe he'll descend into the Republican abyss too. But anyway, interesting speculation. And Vic, we're going to have more conversations. I really enjoy talking with you. They're interesting things. You're kind of like an insider's point of view on these things. And it's always great to have you on the show.
Well, I'm happy to come back anytime. I really enjoy it. And thanks for having me on.
It's been a pleasure, Vic. Okay, you've been listening to Vic Myers here on the Tim Danahy Show. I want to thank you for joining us, and we will be back tomorrow. Talk soon.
To go and kill several millions so CEOs can make several billions. It must be the Prozac in you.
The Tim Danahy Show would like to thank Aaron Taylor of SRC Labs for production management and outreach strategies, and Presonus, a leading designer and manufacturer of audio recording software, hardware, and related accessories, available at Guitar Center. For Edward Danahy for post-production assistance, and for all the stations and affiliates who carry the Tim Danahy Show. And lastly, to Theodore, the studio bull terrier, for his quiet companionship.
It must be the Prozac in you to vote for the Wall Street crew. Their union busting, there's nothing for trusting. Your rights they're taking with laws they are making. Year after year is perfectly clear. It must be the Prozac in you.